Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello again from Washington. I'm Jim Tedder with the program and podcast that helps you learn and improve your American English. We come to you every day with interesting and important stories from around the world. Today we will be talking about politics. Many of you have written to us to say that you are interested in the way our political system and government work, or sometimes don't work. You should enjoy today's program as we look ahead to the election of a new U.S. president in a little over 1 year. You will notice that when we tell about important events, we speak a little more slowly than we normally would if we were telling you a story or a news item. We also try to use words that are easy to understand, and we explain any ideas that may be difficult for you if English is not your first language. Okay, let's get started with today's story. As many people expected, billionaire businessman Donald Trump was the center of attention during the recent Republican presidential debate. The candidates strongly criticized President Obama's immigration policies, the Iran nuclear agreement, and Hillary Clinton. Since then, Mr. Trump has increased his lead in the crowded Republican field for president. A national poll taken by Quinnipiac University in Connecticut shows Mr. Trump leading the Republicans with 28%. That is 8 points higher than where he was just a month ago. Retired surgeon Ben Carson comes in second with 12%. Jeb Bush, the former Florida governor, is in third place. Ann Ball has been keeping an eye and an ear on the political situation here in the United States and tells us more about the people who want to be elected to the highest office in the land. First, she focuses on Mr. Trump's strong numbers in the polls. The question is, how likely is he to be the one Republicans choose? Anne?
Not all of the news was good for Mr. Trump. The same voters that were polled described him as arrogant, blowhard, and an idiot. Jeb Bush did better there. Voters used the words Bush, family, and honest when describing him. Jeb Bush is the son and brother of the former presidents with the same last name, Bush. Speaking to reporters in South Carolina, Mr. Trump said he has the support of the silent majority. He said, "These are Americans who feel abused, that feels forgotten, that feels mistreated, that wants the country to have victories again." Stuart Rothenberg is a political expert with the Rothenberg and Gonzalez Political Report. His newsletter does not support any political candidates or issues. He says Republican voters are not serious yet about who they will choose to be president of the United States.
We're at the point now where voters simply want to express frustration and anger and disappointment with the direction of the country. And so they're looking for someone who gives them voice. And Donald Trump certainly does that.
The New York businessman does not support his policies with details or facts, says Mr. Rothenberg and others who study politics.
Donald Trump seems to pull numbers out of the hat and make huge general statements out of thin air.
Mr. Trump is the most popular candidate among 28% of Republican voters at this time. However, 26% of Republicans also said there is no way they would vote for him. On television and social media, Mr. Trump continues to get attention for his statements about immigration. He has been criticized for negative comments he made about Mexicans.
When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists.
His plan for immigration reform includes ending birthright citizenship. Now, any baby born in the United States automatically gets U.S. citizenship. That is guaranteed by the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Mr. Trump says he would ask the courts to review the law if he were elected president. His immigration policy would overturn President Barack Obama's immigration policy. Mr. Trump said he would deport or return millions of illegal immigrants to their home countries. Mr. Trump also said he wants to build a wall across the U.S.-Mexico border. He said he would require Mexico to pay for it. Other Republicans are concerned about immigration and birthright citizenship. However, Jeb Bush called Mr. Trump's immigration proposal unrealistic. Not all Republican candidates agree with Mr. Trump, but they are afraid to speak against him, said Mr. Rothenberg. He said Jeb Bush is an exception.
I think Jeb Bush is taking him on. But look, it's very clear who's getting all the attention now, who has the momentum, and it's Trump. He's still leading in surveys, and he seems to be dictating the discussion. You know, it's when Donald Trump talks, everybody listens, and he talks a lot. And so it's hard for the other candidates to get through.
Trying to be heard above the noise, Jeb Bush borrowed some of Mr. Trump's words recently. He used Mr. Trump's phrase, anchor babies, to describe babies delivered by foreign women seeking a path to U.S. citizenship. During a campaign event, Mr. Bush said he did not think the phrase anchor baby was offensive. He said, frankly, it's more related to Asian people coming to our country, having children in that organized effort, and taking advantage of birthright citizenship. Asian American leaders called on Mr. Bush to apologize for his comment. Federal agents define maternity tourism as wealthy foreign women giving birth in the U.S. so their children will be U.S. citizens. Many of those women are from China. The Center for Immigration Studies is a nonpartisan research organization. It says every year 300,000 to 400,000 children are born to illegal immigrants in the United States. Who emigrates to the U.S.? Of the 41 million immigrants in the U.S., the majority come from Mexico. Others come from Bhutan, Canada, China, and other countries. More than 1 in 10 people living in the U.S. now were born in another country. Jeb Bush defended his stand on immigration at a campaign event in Colorado. He spoke about his wife, a Mexican immigrant who became a naturalized U.S. citizen.
I'm 62 years old. When I was 17 years old, I fell in love with Columba Garnica de Bush. And it's going to be really hard for me to get lectured to by anybody about the politics of immigration.
Critics of Donald Trump say his campaign will fall apart and he will leave the race. Supporters disagree and say he is a serious candidate for the 2016 race for the White House. I'm Ann Ball.
Thanks, Ann, for all the interesting information. You are listening to VOA, the Voice of America. In about 5 minutes, you can hear more about the history of our government in the popular series, The Making of a Nation. This is Washington.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Education Report. On December 16, 2014, Taliban militants attacked Pakistan's Army Public School. They killed 132 children and 13 teachers. Many call the day Pakistan's 9/11. One U.S. group is helping survivors of the Peshawar Army School attack explore new educational possibilities. 12 male students and two of their teachers recently completed a 2-week study tour in the United States. The Washington-based Meridian International Center invited them. The group took part in a nanotechnology research project at the State University of New York Polytechnic Institute in Albany. They also met with American students and officials. One of the Pakistani students, Muhammad Ahmed Ali Asim, spoke to VOA's Urdu service. He said, "The students hope the study tour will help them in their further education." He said, "It will help them in knowing American history and culture." He added that the students are thankful for the hospitality of the Meridian International Center and the U.S. government. Stuart Holliday is the head of Meridian International Center and a former U.S. representative to the United Nations. He said one goal of the trip is for the students to make friends and spread the message of friendship.
What we are doing is simply what we do with thousands of other young people from around the world, which is giving them an opportunity to really understand American society and culture, but also some of the skills that they're going to need to be successful back home in Pakistan.
Muhammad said it has been a good experience for him to let Americans know about Pakistan and to learn about American society.
Religion is a personal choice, and humanity comes before religion, and that is what I saw in people here. They do not treat others based on their religion.
William Barth is one of the four American students traveling with the group. He attends Ridgefield High School in Ridgefield, Connecticut. He says his understanding of Pakistan has changed. Now he knows it is not just a place of war.
This trip has given me a chance to see Pakistan in a different way. Before this, I saw it through news media and mostly framed in the context of war on terror. I think you can find common ground with anyone if you try hard enough.
The boys took part in a nanotechnology program while at SUNY Albany. The students formed four groups of one American and three Pakistani boys. Each group had to think of a nanotechnology invention and business plan. Then they presented their ideas to science and business leaders. Stuart Holliday said, "The boys can gain much, although the visit is brief."
The relationships last far beyond the 2 weeks.
The students lost many friends in the attack on their school. Nothing will bring them back. But the new friends they made in the U.S. may help the healing process. I'm Jill Robbins.
From VOA Learning English. Welcome to The Making of a Nation, a program of American history for people learning English. I'm Steve Ember. On March 4th, 1801, Thomas Jefferson walked to the Capitol building in Washington. He was about to be inaugurated as the third president of the United States. He entered the Capitol to the thunder of cannon. All the senators and representatives stood until Jefferson sat down. A few moments later, the newly elected president rose and began to read his inaugural speech.
The most famous line in it is, "We are all Federalists, we are all Republicans." It was a statement about, after all of the bitter partisanship of the 1790s, as bitter as anything we see in America in the 2010s, Jefferson says he's going to create a kind of bipartisan presidency.
Historian Joseph Ellis is the author of many books about America's founders. He says Thomas Jefferson's speech was one of the best inaugural addresses in American history. Friends and fellow citizens, I have been called to the position of chief executive of our country. I must tell you how honored and thankful I am. But I must tell you, too, of my fears. Yes, I must tell you that the duties of your president are too much for any one man. However, I tell myself that I am not alone. When I see all your faces, I understand the wisdom of those who wrote our Constitution. For in you, the members of Congress, and in the judicial branch of our government, I know that I shall find the strength, the honesty, the courage that I shall need. We have passed through a hard year of bitter struggle between two political parties. We have shown the world that in America, all can speak, write, and think freely. The debate is over. The people have decided. Now is the time for all of us to unite for the good of all. The majority of the people have won the contest. But we must always remember that there is a minority. True, the majority must rule. But the rule of the majority must be just. The rights of the minority are equal to the rights of the majority and must be protected with equal laws. Let us unite with hearts and minds. Let us have peace and love in our relations with each other. For without peace and love, liberty and life are sad things indeed. Let us remember that the religious freedom which we have in the United States is nothing if we do not have political freedom. If we permit men to be punished because they do not agree with the majority. For hundreds of years in Europe, men have killed and have been killed in the name of liberty. It is not surprising, then, that even here, in our peaceful land, all cannot agree. But it is possible to have different ideas without forgetting our common wish. We are all Republicans. We are all Federalists. Most of us love our country. Most of us want it to grow. There may be among us
those who want to end the union of the states or to end our Republican government, well then, let those men speak freely without fear. They are wrong, but America is strong enough to let them say what they wish. When men can think and speak freely, there is no danger to the nation. For those who do not agree with them also have the right to think and speak freely. There are some honest Americans who are afraid that a Republican government cannot be strong. But I ask these good men one question. Do they want us to destroy a government which has kept us strong and free for 10 years? I hope not. We have here in the United States the best and strongest government in the world. This is the only nation on the earth whose citizens know that the government belongs to them. Then there are some who say that men cannot govern themselves. What do they offer us instead? Government by kings? Are kings men, or are they angels? I will let history answer this question. Let us keep our union and our government by the people through their elected representatives. We are very fortunate here in the New World. Three 3,000 miles of ocean separate us from the wars and the dictatorships of Europe. Here we do not suffer as the people of Europe do. Here we have a great and rich land, with room for 100, perhaps 1,000 generations of Americans yet to be born. We and the American children who will come after us all have equal rights. We honor a man not because of his father, but for what the man is. We do not care what religion a man follows. In this country, men practice religion in many ways. Yet all our religions teach honesty, truth, and the love of man. All worship one God who rules the universe, who wants men to be happy in life. Yes, we are a fortunate people. What more do we need to make us happy? We need one more thing, my fellow citizens, a wise government. A government that keeps men from injuring each other. A government that gives men freedom to live and work in peace as they wish, and does not take from them the fruit of their labor. That is good government. In my short speech, I cannot tell you all the things that I believe our government should do and should not do, but I will tell you what I believe to be the most important principles of our government. This is what I believe in. The same and equal justice to all men, no matter what their religion, their political beliefs, or their class. Peace, trade, and friendship with all nations, but alliances for war with no nations. Support of the rights of the state governments, which are the best defenders of our republic. A strong central government under the Constitution to protect our peace at home and our safety in other parts of the world. we must keep the rights of the people to elect their representatives. This is the safe way to change governments that make mistakes. Without the right of election, we will have bloody revolution. In our election, the majority must rule. This is the lifeblood of a republic. If the majority is not allowed to rule, then we will have dictatorship. America should have a good volunteer army to protect us in peace and in the first days of war until we use professional soldiers. But at all times, the civil officers of the government must be first over the military officers. The rights of man will be of the highest importance in this government. Information, knowledge, and opinions must move easily and swiftly. We will support freedom of religion, freedom of the press, freedom of the person protected by the habeas corpus, and the right to trial by juries that are chosen fairly. These are the freedoms that brought us through a revolution and that made this nation. Our wise men wrote these freedoms. Our heroes gave their lives for these freedoms. They are the stones on which our political philosophy must be built. If we make the mistake of forgetting them, let us return to them quickly, for only these rights of man can bring us peace, liberty, and safety. Well then, my fellow citizens, I go to the position which you have given me. I am no George Washington. I cannot ask you to believe in me as you did in the man who led us through our revolution, the man who will always be first in the love of our country. I ask only that you give me your support and your strength. I know that I shall make mistakes, and even when I am right, there will be men who will say that I am wrong. I ask you to forgive my mistakes, which I promise will at least be honest mistakes. And I ask you to support me when I am right against the attacks of those who are wrong. Always, my purpose will be to strengthen the happiness and freedom of all Americans, those who do not agree with me, as well as those who do. I need you. I go to my work as President of the United States ready to leave that position when you and the American people decide that there is a better man for it. May the power that leads the universe tell us what is best and bring to you peace and happiness. Next week, we talk about whether Thomas Jefferson creates the kind of presidency he says he will. I'm Steve Ember, inviting you to join us each week for The Making of a Nation, a program of American history from VOA Learning English.